Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of Magic with Zuby. My name is Zuby. If you're brand new to this show, the show's all about a little well-known card game called Magic the Gathering, and a little bit more. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about Magic the Gathering and Fallout Universes Beyond, as well as Critical Role's new RPG system, Daggerheart. But before we begin, and we need to give a little bit of an update on Walrus Game Studio, since this podcast is brought to you by Walrus Game Studio. So if you've been listening to the past few episodes, it's been a Walrus water cooler kind of episode format so far, because there's been a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, everything and everywhere with Walrus Game Studio. But it's been a little bit quiet the past few weeks on the podcast front for two reasons. One reason is life has been a bit insane. As you all know, and as I've all mentioned before, this is not, you know, my primary job or anything. I do have a job, a day job, and now being single father, having to take care of the kid a little bit more, and also trying to take care of myself a little bit more as well, too, throwing it in there. So life's been busy, and yeah, we'll just take it from there. So as far as Walrus Game Studio updates as it goes, the Darkstorm Adventures Book 1 is, we're waiting the second proof still from the printer. I'm hoping to get that within the next week or two. And I was really, really hoping we were going to get a quarter one release date. But at this point, it looks like it's going to be early quarter two, just with the way the printing and the proof has gone. Not what we wanted, but the book is coming. It's coming. It's just we have to wait. And it's a hurry up and wait kind of scenario that's kind of driving me crazy. For Darkstorm Adventures Book 2, it is currently in the works. We are working on it. I've got, you know, I'm working on it a few times a week. I'm hoping to start some playtest sessions soon. This book is going to be a lot bigger and a little bit more involved than Book 1, which I'm super excited about. And as far as I know, what everybody's waiting to hear about, Network Engineer Simulator. Network Engineer Simulator still is continuing work on the background. We are pushing our, you know, hoping for a demo release soon. I know it's that famous soon TM, but it's really, there's just a lot of stuff going on with all of us personally, work-wise, family-wise, and really it's, we're trying to shore up as much stuff as we can. If you missed it last week, as of this recording, I did a live Q&A session that's on the Walrus Game Studio YouTube channel. You can look at the VOD from there and just see. I did a gameplay of what the current demo level looks like, all the cabling. There's just a lot of little stuff that we're working on the back end to tidy up. We're finishing the layout of the demo level. There's so much. Like, we have a weekly meeting every Thursday night that we go over, like, this is what we're working on. I was working on sound effects last week, and let me tell you, that's really fun. I have to admire people who are in the sound effects biz for video games, movies, TV shows, you know, those Foley people where they just make sound effects for the most random stuff, and it's super exciting stuff, guys. And if you're not watching the video right now, you see me, I'm smiling. It's so much fun. But it's something that has to get done. But yeah, so Network Engineer Simulator, we're still working on it. We are over 8,500 wish lists at this point as of the recording, and it's still insane. It boggles my mind that we have this many people wanting to play it. It's fantastic. It's amazing. So it's coming. The Discord for Walrus Game Studio keeps growing. We're getting new people all the time. Awesome. Welcome to all the new people who are coming in. And just, we understand we want to give this game out. We want people to play it. We want the feedback. We want to hear. We're so excited that people are excited and wanting to play this game. Trust me. We're working on it. We're trying to get there. So it's coming. We got registered for Steam Next Fest in June. So we're going to be doing that. I'll be live streaming that entire day, whichever day we decide. to do it on, and it'll be fun. And hopefully by then, we definitely have our demo out by then. I'm hoping. It's, you know, like I said, life happens. You know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I don't know. Forget about it. You know, so anyways, let's get back into the main topic here, talking about Fallout and Daggerheart. So if you've seen me stream Magic before, or you've heard my other streams, or you've seen me on Twitter, I've never. Okay, let's rewind the clock a little bit here. I didn't mind Universes Beyond in the beginning when it was The Walking Dead. Then you had, you know, the Godzilla thing. You had, was it Stranger Things at the beginning? There was a few in the beginning. I don't remember exactly what they all were. I know Walking Dead was the big one. And I was like, you know, whatever. It's fine. You know, if this is going to be a once in a while thing, okay, whatever. Whatever you want to do. Cool. I didn't really mind it at first. And then it just seemed like it was getting more and more frequent that this is turning into a Fortniteification of the game. And I've come to the realization that instead of fighting it, you just have to accept it. You know, I still love the game of Magic. It's still a lot of fun. It's a great game. And you just, it's like going through the stages of grief, right? You just come to learn acceptance of it. You know, past the denial stage and the anger, and now it's just like, all right, well, whatever. That's what the game's going to be. And Fallout, you know, I've got a weak spot for Fallout because I love Fallout. Which one? No, Fallout 2. I love Fallout 2. Fallout 3, of course. You know, I've never played Fallout New Vegas. Strike that. I've only played like an hour of Fallout New Vegas. Couldn't get into it. This was years ago when it first came out. Loved Fallout 4. And I've only played a little bit of Fallout 1, and I don't think I've ever played Fallout Tactics before. I think there's like one more Fallout game, but I love Fallout. I love the series. Fallout 2 and 3, probably some of my favorite, you know, Fallout games. So seeing the Fallout Commander decks, I'm like, okay, all right, Wizards, you got me. You win this time. And yeah, I bought all four Commander decks, and if you're looking at my screen, you know, I've got the Dog Meat, I've got them all here. The Caesar one, I don't have any of them sleeved up or anything like that, but, you know, you got me. You win again, Wizards. It's, you win, and it is what it is. So, I just sort of want to talk about that. You know, I've still got reservations on some of the other, you know, Universes Beyond. I still think the Lord of the Rings one is terrible. I've just got so many problems with what they've done with that set. I mean, sure, there's some cool cards. I don't know. Just not a fan of it. Not a fan of it. But, you know, as I'm going to start streaming, I've got some. So I've missed about 2 years of Magic, so I've been trying to catch up on it. And I've got some booster boxes on the way that I'll do some box openings. You know, stream them and all that stuff, talk about them, organize cards, talk about cards that, you know, I've pretty much missed and haven't talked about on the podcast in forever. So we'll talk about that. So we've got that coming. But I wanted to talk about, you know, the top five Fallout cards that I am honestly excited about after I looked through the whole set, and super excited about playing some of these in either the pre-cons or in other decks. Let me rearrange the order here a little bit. God, it's, you're going to notice a sort of theme here of the cards that I really like here. So if you're watching the video right now, I'm going to be switching screens here. Okay. All right. So these are the top five Fallout cards that I'm excited about. The first one being the Wise Mothman. All right. So obviously I like some of the other characters better. The Wise Mothman, as a character, it's okay. Never really cared for it too much in the game. I've been more of a Preston Garvey or Dog Meat type of character, or a character lover. I know Fallout 4 wasn't very loved, but I loved that game. I had so much fun. Fallout 3 and 4 probably, well, 2 also. 2, 3, 4. Yeah. I really need to play through 1 some more. But yeah, so I just loved what the Wise Mothman ability, like the whole rad counter ability, I love it. Whenever the Wise Mothman enters the battlefield or attacks, each player gets a rad counter. Whenever one or more non-land cards are milled, put a 1-1 counter on each of up to X target creatures, where X is the number of non-land cards milled this way. All right, so let's look up what a rad counter does, because I can't remember off the top of my head. So a rad counter reads, at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, if you have any rad counters, mill that many cards. For each non-land card milled this way, you lose one life and a rad counter. So I'm a sucker for mill. I really like mill. I love playing, and this is a Sultai card, right? I love playing self-mill, you know, like doing a Muldrotha type, you know, self-mill graveyard deck. I love milling other players. I've always been a fan of playing mill decks whenever playing, you know, super casual, like popper, standard kind of decks. You know, so this spoke to me. Out of all the face commanders of the Fallout decks, this one spoke to me the most once I learned what a rad counter does. So this is the first deck I bought, and I want to play it just out of the box as is and see how it goes. Well, I was looking at the Dr. Madison Lee one with the Liberty Prime card. That looks really fun. Dr. Madison Lee herself looks really fun with the energy counters, because I loved energy from Kaladesh. So I'd have to say this is probably my first card that I'm super excited about. The next one would be, of course, Preston Garvey. There's another settlement under attack that needs your help. Go on, get them. Preston Garvey Minutemen, which is a Naya card. So at the beginning of combat on your turn, create a green aura enchantment token named Settlement attached to up to one target land you control. It has enchant land. An enchanted land has add one mana of any color. Whenever Preston Garvey Minuteman attacks, untap each enchanted permanent you control. So awesome. You know, this kind of like has that really cool Voltron vibe, where if you want to add a whole bunch of auras onto Garvey, you know, I'm just going to untap them. It's sort of like a pseudo vigilance type thing, if you want to go that way. And plus, you know, I love the flavor settlement. There's another settlement under attack. We got to go help them. And then you come to realize, oh, well, there's always going to be a settlement under attack, because I swear I spent hours in one play session of Fallout 4 thinking, all right, well, before I continue on with the main story, I'm just going to keep helping these settlements that are under attack. And then you realize, oh, it's just going to keep going. It's a never-ending thing to, like, keep gaining more level experience and all this stuff. And you're like, oh. And then, probably like most people, you just start ignoring Preston Garvey and, like, I'm not going to help these settlements anymore. Screw it. But I had to include Preston because he was one of my favorites in the game. God, this is making me really want to play Fallout all over again. I've got so many other games I need to play. Not enough time. But damn. So next we got the Tunnel Snake Butch Deloria. Of course, I only really like this card because of the fucking flavor text. Alright, hey, Butch Deloria. Alright, he's a one in a black menace. That's right. I love it. They give him menace, the keyword menace, and he is a menace in the game. He's an asshole in the game. Like, I literally just played through the beginning of Fallout 3 a couple days ago, and Butch is such an asshole during your birthday party. And then, of course, as he's trying to harass Amata and all that stuff, the overseer's daughter, he's a fucking menace. He's a little shit. And he's got Tunnel Snakes Rule. We're the Tunnel Snakes. That's right. And we rule. All right. As I'm done embarrassing myself, whenever Butch Deloria attacks, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn for each other rogue and or snake you control. Put a menace counter on another target creature. It becomes a rogue in addition to its other types. So, love it. Love it. You know, you could easily build like a rogue tribal deck, you know, rogue snake tribal, whatever the hell you want. And yeah, it's just the flavor text. I love the art and freaking Butch. You know, I in the quick little playthrough that I did save Butch's mother during the Rad Roaches on the escape out of Vault 101, but Butch didn't make it at the end. I wonder why, because he's a little fucking shit, that's why. Next card is Vats. I mean, how can you not be it? How can you not love this card? All right. It's perfectly on flavor. I love that it's split second. It's basically a weird kind of conditional board wipe. Choose any number of target creatures with equal toughness. Destroy the chosen creatures. It's great. I love Vats. I love... I only picked it because it's the flavor text of it and just the art of it. And yeah, I love how they're able to incorporate a game mechanic as a card here like this. It's great. Last but not least, this is mainly due to the art, due to that famous Thanksgiving art, Nuclear Fallout. Each creature gets twice X minus X until end of turn. Each player gets X rad counter. So this not only fits in perfectly with the Wise Mothman, you've got the extra rad counters, and hell, you can pay a lot to get those creatures very radiated, or not creatures, but get those players very radiated as well. So there you have it for the top five Fallout cards that I really, really like. And I'm super excited to try to play some of the pre-cons just as is to see how they play together. Hoping to try to do that soon, either on stream or maybe in person. You never know. So now that leads us to our next topic, which is about Daggerheart. Daggerheart is a RPG system that Critical Role has announced, I think, sometime last year. And before I start here, I'm not a big fan of Critical Role as it is today. I really liked what I heard of Campaign 1. I never did finish it, but, you know, I read up on it. Campaign 2, I liked the beginning, then sort of fell off. My issue with Critical Role mainly is just the amount of time and... mainly the amount of time it takes to really watch an episode and get into it, when it's like, okay, if this was the only thing I ever watched, sure, but, you know, I have other interests, and it just, I don't know. And I tried really hard to get into Campaign 3. I made it like maybe 8 episodes in before I'm like, okay, I'm out. I'm not enjoying this at all. I don't like any of the characters. I still enjoy, you know, keeping an eye on what they're doing. I know they just released that other system, Candela Obscura, I think. I didn't read too much about it. But then Daggerheart, the one that's supposed to be like the big D&D alternative, I'm like, okay, I'm interested in seeing what's going on here. Sort of reading it, you know, even though I may not personally ever play it, I'm still kind of interested in just checking it out because I like reading other RPG systems and... you know, hey, maybe taking some ideas from them, because that's what's one of the great things about these kind of games. So I started reading the open beta rules this morning, and the more I read about it, the more I'm like, okay, this is not for me. This is a weird mix of a narrative style RPG trying to be like D&D. And I feel like it's, at least as the rules are written right now, I'm not interested. So before I get into what I'm not into, the way that I look at when I look at a new RPG system is I really care more about the GM's perspective or the DM's perspective, because I am more of one of those forever DMs. I've never been one of those people who gets super into creating characters and like learning how to min-max them or come up with unique ways to make a character. That's just never been my thing, because when I am learning a new system, I like to learn how to create a character, right? Because, okay, so I can teach others how to do it. So when I'm looking at Daggerheart here, I'm looking at, okay, how do you play this game, right? Because I'm not too interested in how the classes work per se. I'm interested in like how the rules themselves are sort of shaped and how players and GMs have to be able to play the game, if that makes sense. Not that I don't care about how classes play or ancestries, anything like that. It's just, for me, that's sort of second to what I'm looking for in an RPG system. So I started reading it this morning. I'm reading through some of the classes and stuff. I'm like, okay, well, you know. All right. So I know this is sort of narrative based, and I have the only narrative type game that I've even played before would be Torg. And it was years ago, and we probably didn't play it the right way when I think about it. But the way we played Torg was very narrative based, where literally all we had was a pencil, a paper, and a D20. And essentially the way we played it was you could literally make any character you wanted, and they had a set pool of hit points, right? And whatever you wanted to do, you would have to describe what you'd want to do. So let's say combat, you know, okay, a fighter versus a town guard, right? Okay, well, I'm the fighter. I'm going to go and swing my sword at the guard and try to hit them in the chest to slash them, right? So then what you would describe what you do, and then what you do is you and the GM roll against each other. If I roll my D20 higher than the GM, then I succeed. If I don't, then I fail. And then when the GM wants to have someone attack me, it's the same thing. We roll against each other. So that way, like, combat was pretty fast, and there were set turns. And so I'm gonna share my screen again here if you're watching. So I put out a Twitter post out there today, and it's kind of blown up. I put the tweet, for Daggerheart, these two sections just definitely cemented it's not for me. I mean, have the designers not played at a lot of TTRPG tables? The clashing personalities, the rules lawyer, the loud one taking the spotlight, the quiet person who barely speaks, the one on their phone the whole time. And I say that because when I got to the section, what can I do on my turn? It specifically states, this game has no turns in the traditional sense. Players don't have a set amount of actions they can take or things they can do before play passes to someone else. Instead, everyone should follow the fiction to figure out what happens next, bouncing around the table to whoever it makes sense to spotlight in that moment. Generally, players in the spotlight will have the chance to describe their move, what their character is doing in the scene. If something they describe requires a roll to see whether it works, then the player pauses while a roll is made to determine how things play out. Certain roll results in other situations can prompt the GM to make a GM move. These are specific types of actions the GM takes to advance the story. For a full explanation of GM moves, see Making Moves in Part 3. Since Daggerheart relies on a flexible back-and-forth conversation between the GM and players, there are no combat rounds to worry about. However, in combat scenarios that have the potential to last more than a few rolls, or in any scene where moment-to-moment gameplay becomes important to track, you can use the action tracker. So, while the very last paragraph sort of answers what you could do if combat doesn't take too long, it's really what gets to me about this is this has no turns, where in most other sort of, at least when I played a lot of Torg, we had turns in the sense where you sort of did, you know, a movement and an action. Even this was all theater of the mind too, meaning that you're not playing with you know, miniatures on a playmat or anything like that. So there's really no tactical combat per se. So it's all just imagination, for lack of a better word. So when you're having this, it just really got me thinking, well, and yeah, I didn't word it very well. It was just more, I'm trying to think, like, have they not played at a table with a lot of different people? Because just in my experience with DMing for over two decades now, it's, you're always going to have that one player who's going to be the spotlight on me player. I want all the attention. And you sort of have to, as a DM, you have to be like, whoa, wait, okay, well, what about Sally over here? Okay, Fred, calm down. You know, let's talk about Sally. What does Sally want to do? And yes, that is the GM's prerogative, that they probably need to, in this system, make sure that everyone has the chance to describe what they're doing. But the fact that it's so free form is what I have a problem with. Yes, you can do the action tracker, which in what I think should be the default go-to, but as it, But GMs could probably just be like, okay, well, everything's just going to be improv. Everything's just going to be on the seat of our pants and just sort of go from there. And it kind of just makes me wonder, who is this game made for? Like, it now, there is a lot to be said about the evolution that TTRPGs have taken ever since Critical Role has, you know, really hit sort of the gaming mainstream in a sense. So the theater and improv has, and the narrative has really taken a forefront in TTRPGs in the past like 4, 5, 6 years, right? Or however long. And it's a very different style of playing compared to when you look at traditional D&D, right? I'm going to keep using D&D as the example because that is the most popular system. That is what people are most familiar with. And there's been this whole thing happening where we're trying to shift how the games work into a more narrative and more theatrical sense compared to when you look at the actual base rules of a game like D&D, even 5th edition. It is a combat game. It is a tactical game by its nature, just by the rules as written. So when you're looking at this, and the fact that there are a lot of rules that are kind of similar to the way D&D plays with Daggerheart, it feels like this rule here that there's no turns doesn't fit, right? That even though it's fine to sort of describe what you're doing and, you know, have the fiction follow, which I don't like that saying, it's dumb. Follow the fiction to figure out what happens next. It makes more sense for a set of turns to happen because you're going to have players that are just not comfortable speaking up. You're going to have the players that are just fine being passive and just be like, okay, well, I just do this and that. So that's one of my big gripes with it. And then the other thing that really that it had was the flow of combat section where it says combat in Daggerheart has no initiatives, no rounds, and no distinct number of actions you can take on your turn. Instead, any fights that happen play out narratively moment to moment, just like any other action characters might take. This provides the players opportunities to team up together in their tactics, respond appropriately to narrative changes in the scene, and not be locked into only doing violence once the first strike happens. Similarly, enemies don't have a set order in which they act. Instead, the GM will make moves in accordance with the fiction. Oftentimes, these moves will happen when a player rolls with fear or fails the action they were attempting, but a GM can make a move anytime the narrative demands it. When they make a move, they will usually escalate the scene in an exciting and dangerous way. A character might take an attack from some enemies, become vulnerable, or anything else that significantly changes the scene. This creates a back-and-forth conversation that lets the story evolve organically between the players and the GM. I've got a big problem with this section, too, because, to be fair, I'm a very rules-based person, right? So this is why I say this game is probably not for me the way it's written right now, because when you need some guidelines and some rules as a GM to understand what you really need to do for, you know, the monsters you're fighting, you know, you're creating and playing as to verse the players, right? What this reads, it sounds like it's just two people playing with action figures and just fighting each other. Like, oh, I'm going to do my, you know, shield of warding as you do your magic laser. Oh, no, the magic laser doesn't penetrate through my shield, so I'm going to do my Kamehameha blast or something like that. You know, and that's to me how it reads. So if that's how combat is supposed to go and people are enjoying it, okay. It just, it feels like you're just more acting out a scene than actually playing a game. And if that's what they want, cool. But it's just a little bit weird that there's so many of these little mechanics that they've described. This was page 163. Like, some of their mechanics are just very D&D-esque, and it doesn't fit or anything. So, and I don't know. I just have a problem with that, where it's like, okay, this doesn't fit. So Yeah, I mean, what are some of your thoughts out there on it? Like, obviously, this Twitter thread that I posted, it's been blowing up. There's a lot I don't agree with what they're saying in it, because it's just not, definitely not for me. And as I start reading more, like, I started reading some more of the GM part, like the follow the narrative. Daggerheart is a player-driven game, and so the overarching plot, the campaign, should emerge from collaboration with the players, tying the character stories together with one another in the world and its major events. That's fine. Daggerheart thrives when the GM creates room to be surprised by what the players will do, the choices they make, and the people they become as they pursue their hopes and battle their fears. It's most useful to prepare situations about expectations about the solutions. That's fine. Fine to say. The story, you know, you always want the story to move forward. Collaboration is key. Everyone's on the same team. Narrative first, begin and end with the fiction. The fiction refers to the world of the story and what's happening within it. Use the fiction to decide when to call for roles. What gets me about this, and, you know, I always see this sort of conversation start to happen on social media where it's like, oh, well, I don't like playing with the old style of people who like to play RPGs where it's the DM versus the players. The DM's trying to purposely kill the players. Yeah, I mean, I've played with DMs like that. They're assholes, and it's annoying. It's frustrating. But it's also kind of cool, like, when you as a player get one over on the DM, you're like, ha, fuck you, buddy. But, I mean, yeah, I don't like that. But it's the way this is also reading, it's where it says everyone's on the same team. Yes, as all the times that I've DM'd or GM'd, whatever, you know, you want your players to succeed, but you want to make sure there's a challenge. You want there to be the possibility that they all fail, right? Because if there are no stakes, per se, if there are no, like, real consequences, and as I read through, like, these GM sections where it's like, you know, if they fail, don't make it too harsh or whatever, you're just sort of like, what's the point? What's the point where it's just, okay, you're just stoking or you're just stroking the players' egos to sort of do the cool, amazing thing they want. And it's, if there's no possibility of failing, what's kind of the point of the game, right? Where it's sort of like you want to play Elden Ring, right? But you only want to play Elden Ring on super easy mode where, you know, you don't have, you know, the chance of dying at all, right? And it's like, did you really beat the game, though? Or did you really have fun doing it when you know that the game's supposed to be played in a certain way? And, I mean, if that's what players want, okay, that's fine. That's fine. But, I don't know. It's just... And don't take this wrong that I'm trying to make it seem like, no, we need to make sure the players have zero fun and they're always fearing for their life and all that stuff. But we also need to make sure players are, you know, having challenges and having to overcome challenges and knowing that there is a really good chance that what they're trying to do will kill them or they will fail, right? Where was it? Yeah, so there's a part here, undermining the heroes. Let me switch my camera over here. That really kind of, like, got to me where sort of my sentiment was coming from. So, even at level 1, the heroes are accomplished adventurers with talent and experience. This is a heroic fantasy game, and so the characters are assumed to be skilled at the basics of adventuring. On a failure, things go badly and the character doesn't get what they want. But rather than describing the PCs being incompetent, it's usually better to show how the failure comes from environmental factors or unexpected surprises. An easy way to make this work is to start by describing the cool or smart move the character is making, then saying, but, and describing a surprise, complication, or escalation. It's like, okay, so you roll a nat 1 on something. Okay, instead of having the feel bads, we need to make sure that the cool thing still happens, but they raise their shield at the last minute, right? It's
it's that kind of where I'm like, okay, but why? I mean, people fail, right? You're gonna fail. You're gonna fuck up. Not every single adventurer out there, even level one adventurers, are, you know, the super smartest and brightest. You're gonna fail. You're gonna fuck up. Show that failure. Show that fuck up. Let it happen. You know, instead of trying to ease the feelings of it. So I don't know. Maybe that's just the old curmudgeon of me speaking out, but we'll see. So there, I'm curious as to how this play system will evolve. I'm going to keep following it and probably even buy the product when it comes out. And like I said, I love learning about other RPG systems, reading about them, and just, you know, learning from them too. So we'll see what happens with it. I'm curious to see how it evolves, and, you know, maybe my thoughts will change as the beta expands as well too. But as it stands right now, I've got zero interest in trying this out. It's definitely zero interest for me right now. I'm more interested in Matt Coville's RPG system he's got working up on. I think I backed his Kickstarter too. Think so. I gotta look. I've backed a bunch of Kickstarters lately, and I can't remember what I backed. And, you know, when they finally do show up a year later, I'll be like, oh, I don't even remember I did this. But anyways, so that's it for the show. A little bit shorter today, shorter episode. I wanted to get something out there, as I haven't dropped an episode in a while. So thank you all for listening and watching. I hope you have a great and awesome day or night whenever you're listening to this. And thank you again. Have a good one.